All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg. We have a fantastic broadcast. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Doing great. How are you today?
Fantastic. Great audience on WWDB Talk 860. Before we get into our legal conversation, we've got a fantastic guest, and we're actually going to bring him in early around the city of brotherly love. Tonight, the Sixers are playing Brooklyn. And Ben Simmons is supposed to be in the house. I cannot imagine what that's going to be like. Aaron Allmiller is with us, the fantastic federal workers' compensation attorney. Aaron, how are you?
Doing well.
Well, we want to engage you in this conversation before we talk about your practice. I mean, are you going to be there?
I am trying so hard to be there tomorrow night, but so far that is not happening. But I can't tell you, I am revved up and excited to see our friend Ben Simmons return. It's going to be one hell of a night.
I mean, listen, I was in the nightclub business, and I'm not kidding you when I tell you this, 15, 20 security guards a night, right? Now, that's a big place. They got hundreds of them. I can't imagine how many extra security. Not that the fans, no one's going to attack them, but
Are you sure?
This might be the most unhealthy, insane environment in the history of sports, Aaron.
It's going to be raw. I mean, there are so many mixed emotions. I'm glad I'm not going. I'm going to watch the game with my 16-year-old son, who's been texting me memes all day, all week. So, and then my other three kids don't care. So it'll be mellow.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? As much as Jeff, you and I talked about this. I mean, this is a rough city, obviously, we know. But one thing that Ben misunderstood, by the way, we're all like the heart blood of you know, like, I mean, I can tell you, I think we all know, had he gave it a shot and came in, even if it wasn't a three-point play, first slam dunk, and everybody, in other words, you know, by the end of the game, you know, two games in, no one even knows about it. Now, you know, I mean, he miscalculation there, man.
He didn't meet us halfway. I mean, like you said, if he just tried a little bit, if he just apologized a little bit after Game 7 against Atlanta, was a little bit just said, look, I need to be better.
It's on me.
Our team needs to be better. I have to work on things. And he came out, like you said, and had a dunk, a layup, and we saw him at least giving an effort in the offseason. All would have been forgotten early on, but that didn't happen. And it's clear to me that it's more mental with him than anything else, and it is a shame for him.
Your wife is a psychologist. Have you talked to her at all about it?
So she's getting calls now to discuss Ben Simmons, and really doesn't care about sports.
Unfortunately, it's not from Ben's family. That would have been great.
No,
I mean, if he would have got real help.
But he is somebody that just really has struggled mentally, and tomorrow night I think they're putting him on the bench for one reason. It's that first baby step to acclimating and getting it over with in Philadelphia, because he's going to face so much more than just in Philadelphia. It's going to happen in every city. And there's a chance that he may not overcome this, and who knows if he plays again.
I agree, Aaron.
You ever see Tin Cup? If somebody manages to fix him, that will be the psychologist that everybody goes to. They will have made their money. They'll be the Dr. Andrews of psychology.
It's funny. I did a show.
Kevin Costner.
Right. Great.
What an attorney. And the attorney, he's going to remain nameless. But he said something. He was so venomous about, you know, the situation. And I get it. Everybody is. But he talked about, you know, people, you know, are sitting there and wishing Ben, you know, hoping he has a nervous breakdown. I, you know, at the end of the day, I would never want to see that happen to anybody, you know, but they're going to give it to him tomorrow, man. I mean, he's
public enemy number one. I mean, he has not shown any willingness to meet anybody halfway. He's said nothing. He, you know, we'll see if he shows up tomorrow night.
Yeah.
There could be some last minute reason why he doesn't come to Philadelphia. We'll see.
It was ironic because the last show we did, Jeff, you and I were talking about did I think we were going to get rid of Ben Simmons and would we ever get Harden, and we were getting close down. And Jeff said he thought so, and I thought, no way. Who's going to take him? And there the next day it happened. I was picking my son up from the airport, and he jumped out of his seat almost, or I was dropping him off. And my God, here we are. But it reminds me, in a sense, you just saw Carson Wentz got traded. Did you see that?
Where did he get traded to?
Washington.
Oh.
We're going to get
the Commanders.
City. Yeah, get the Commanders.
And Commander Carson has a ring to it.
Yeah.
Wow.
But there's another guy right there who quit. And at the at, you know, at, he's got other – he's also got some emotional issues. We're going to see him. I can't imagine seeing Carson coming here once a year minimum. And, of course, Ben being in Brooklyn. They both got traded to teams in the division.
And it all happened in the same year. The two biggest villains really in current Philadelphia sports are going to be coming to our city regularly, and we're going to be reminded of these two people for years and years to come. It's incredible.
That's true. If Ben really ever plays, you think this, and do you really honestly think, and I just want your opinions, do you really think there's a chance that he may not ever play again?
I do. I think there's a chance. Especially, I mean, you're running a little bit of an experiment, bringing him onto the bench and bring him in these places. And, you know, people pay a lot of money those seats to say what they think, and they're drinking some beers. And, I mean, you have 20,000 people. I mean, it doesn't – even if 95% of the people are sort of sympathetic on some level – There's still a high probability of a percentage that somebody's going to be angry and is going to let it out. And if you're that delicate, it just seems like a high possibility of failure. I understand why they might need to be baby steps, but perhaps the horizon for Brooklyn should be next year building up rather than this year.
Maybe
for the playoffs. So.
No, I agree. Yeah, but maybe they're concerned. They want to get this over with before I think it's a disaster. If the guy can't play, why put him on the bench? He's a sitting duck. All he is a duck. You know, at least he can you know come back, slam dunk, and flip everybody the bird. Hypothetically, you know, like so. But the point is, if he's not playing, he's just going to be sitting there for an hour.
I'm concerned about one thing. I hope that Philadelphia doesn't walk. They're going to the national narrative tomorrow is going to be brutal. You know, they're going to mention Santa Claus again and throwing snowballs, and they're going to review the history, the resume of the Philadelphia fan and how awful we are.
You mean they could be talking about this for 30, 40 years like Santa Claus?
Absolutely.
1960 what? Whatever.
Tomorrow night is another chapter in the Philadelphia fans' history, and I'm just hoping that nothing truly awful happens, because there is that possibility that, because I go to Eagles games and Sixers games very regularly, and I got to say that I'm a little nervous for Ben Simmons
tomorrow night, and
our city.
That is, the bench area is a pretty affluent area in regards to the season ticket holders and those people at the games. I wonder, I can't imagine, you know, some doctor jumping or one of your colleagues. Maybe I don't know you guys as much.
Well, sound travels, so, you know.
I don't mean that. I'm saying taking a shot at him or anything. I don't mean a gunshot. I'm talking about somebody, you know, throwing something at him.
Hey, I go to Eagles games, and I always tell people this. No matter if you sit in club box, 50-yard line, great seats, no matter where you sit at the link, anything can happen. And I've sat everywhere, and I held off taking my son to his first game.
Probably a good idea, right?
Until this year. He was 11.
Yeah.
And even the Chargers game that we went to, where there's no rivalry, right, there's no history, mm-hmm, they have great-looking uniforms, they have this good young quarterback, there were still fans behind me, five maybe college students that traveled from San Diego, and they got heckled, and they think beer thrown on them, and they had to leave. They had to leave in the fourth quarter doing nothing except being good fans that traveled to Philadelphia.
And guys, I was a union iron worker. If you look, so I say that, and I told you that before, but there's no more rough and tumble, none, zero more rough and tumble crew than the guys I grew up with. And I get offended at games, you know, when you hear some of that crap, right? I've you know, the stories, if we were to sit here and tell stories about Eagles games, and I got several that I could spit right off of situations that happened. I mean, we were there on Reggie White night, okay? That was Seattle. We were losing 35-0 at halftime. Coy Detmer was the backup quarterback. They brought him in. They were going, Coy, Coy, Coy. First place, he gets the snap and fumbles, And it's a defensive touchdown, right? They was booed. I mean, but it was nuts. They booed Jeffrey Lurie. It was crazy. But, of course, they stuck around at halftime for Reggie White's family. And, right. Of course, everyone see that. But at the beginning of the game, a young lady in a pink Eagles, we were in the end zone, and a pink Eagles jersey and a hoodie turns around and raises her hand to the crowd, right? Well, halfway through the first quarter, we were getting crushed, and everything went towards her. They had to get security. They had some guy in the stands. They had to put a referee's shirt on because he had a Seattle. And Seattle hadn't even won a Super Bowl. No one cared about Seattle. So nothing surprises me when it comes to the Eagles games. This is going to be that type of environment tomorrow night.
Fingers crossed tomorrow night.
We'll absolutely. Say. Let's listen, everybody, you know, just hold, you know, do have your fun, but – you know, nothing. Oh, you know, when
say a prayer for our city.
Yeah, please. Security, please.
A couple things. First of all, I don't know if you saw the La Liga game. The 19 soccer. People died in soccer match this past week. So as bad as we can be, we're not that. To take off of what Jeff said, I think you're putting everybody in a position to fail, both Ben Simmons and the fans.
Yeah.
I really don't know what they're going to accomplish. Let's say they manage to somehow get him on the court this year. The playoffs, he has under a 40% free throw percentage in the playoffs because of that pressure. Somebody's going to go hack a Ben on him in the playoffs.
He becomes unplayable at times.
I don't see what the point. And the third point I have is that Santa, I've seen video. It was a bad Santa, okay?
Yeah, it was a bad. Well, he deserved it. We all know that.
Of course.
But let's knock on everything that it works out. But anyway, guys, we have a fantastic show. Jeff, by the way, this is your official launch broadcast, which, I mean, we had your pilot show, and that was great, but this is your launch show, and it's I'm real excited about it, so I want to congratulate you officially.
Thank you. I'm really pumped to be here and really, really glad to have Aaron here.
Absolutely.
This is going to be the start of something great together.
Well, let's remember.
With you and with Aaron, with everybody.
Absolutely, Jeff. And I think we should come clean. The other 25 guys couldn't make it. And I think you should come clean to Aaron.
There's always one sucker, right?
That's right. Is he there? I said that to my wife today. We were kind of joking around, and she's, she's always breaking them on me. And she's like, well, the other guys couldn't, you know, they weren't available the day I met you. I'm like, okay, great, thanks, baby.
It was Aaron's birthday, and he didn't have plans, so he decided to be on my radio show.
Well, that's right. I say yes, and that's how I ended up with four kids. So,
don't we all? Believe me when I tell you. But that's another show, guys. So Jeff, if you would introduce Aaron, because, you know, he's an outstanding attorney, and he's a specialist in an area that is so specialized that it's actually like almost like meeting Springsteen. You know what I mean? Literally speaking, there's not many of him that go around.
We have a VIP in our presence today, and I'm really pleased to introduce my good friend, colleague, Aaron Allmiller. We met a long time ago. I'm thinking like 20 years ago. Aaron was just a general personal injury attorney. I met him at a law firm that he was working at. He was doing what I was doing, and we were handling car accidents and slip and fall and work accidents. And Aaron saw the light that I didn't see. He was smarter than me and said, hey, there's a lot of guys doing what you do and I'm doing, Jeff, but I got to find a super hyper specialty to differentiate myself. And he did just that. And he took workers' compensation to another level and became a federal workers' compensation attorney, which was genius because there really weren't many of them. We've referred to the fact that there's thousands and thousands of lawyers in the city, but maybe there's three federal workers' comp lawyers in the whole area, and Aaron, I believe, to be the best of that group. And he's a proud graduate of the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers, both undergrad and law school, part of the Big Ten beatdown that Penn State puts on them every year.
Yeah, it's important.
But everybody needs that team. That, you know, it's an automatic win on the schedule.
You're darn right.
Aaron's team is that team. And he started a very, very successful firm. And I know his partner, Jason Lomax, and the two of them have been really ultra successful together. He's just really killed it in the federal workers' compensation realm. And I believe pretty much every lawyer in this area refers to him because not only is he the best, there aren't many of him, and he has just done an outstanding job. So thank you, Aaron, for being here. thank you for coming on your birthday, and I really greatly appreciate you.
Well, it's an honor, especially your introductory show, so I really appreciate it. I'm excited to be here. I will say my parents went to Penn State, met at Penn State. My uncle played Penn State football. So
really?
Yeah, I don't root to Rutgers in those games. Come on. The family, there's certain things that are multi-generational.
You can't cross the lines, you don't cross. Right. So, Aaron, if you would tell, you know, and you know, build on Jeff's kind of introduction to what, you know, how you got where you're at, and then talk about the firm, of course.
Sure. So I had done a judicial clerkship, and I had been doing sort of per diem, especially starting doing landlord-tenant, a lot of landlord-tenant and some personal injury. And then I really hung out my own shingle, and I actually met through Jeff through another per diem attorney. And so I just was sort of recruited to be a per diem attorney, meaning just, you know, getting work from other attorneys. And so I would start off doing, I don't know, 50 or 60 different areas of the law, but I always with some personal injury stuff. And Jeff taught me a lot about that. And gradually over the years, I did various things, like even tax sale foreclosure work with the bankruptcy aspect of that, and these different types of specialties. And I really, as Jeff said, at some point that it kind of dawned on me that I really wanted an area where I could sort of be the man. That specialty specialist was sort of the way to go, especially with my personality. You know, you got to know your limitations. You know, Dirty Harry, a man's got to know his limitations. I kind of knew that I could be sort of the first among equals ultimately, but I couldn't be the little brother forever. So, you know, knowing that, I knew I kind of had to do my own thing. Jeff reflected on that, you know, sort of not the corporate way in your show last week. I listened to it. It was great. You know, Jeff's a lot better on the radio than in person, and I have a face for radio myself, so this is a great format for both of us.
But. Jeff could he could easily do that TV. He could easily do TV, radio, whatever.
Yeah.
I disagree with you, but that's why I'm on radio.
Well, I could be behind the camera.
I can do anything. I choose to do radio.
That's right.
I'm sucking it, brother. Let me tell you.
There you go. So, I picked up a little bit from each of these firms. And what I didn't realize, it was actually interesting, I kept getting offered jobs. And I'm like, I don't want a job. I don't understand why you people are offering me jobs. I didn't realize that it's really a big jump to go from one attorney to two attorneys and two attorneys to three attorneys. So a lot of these other attorneys were looking to get me along with sort of a book of business and to join in. That way, you know, if I have half of an attorney worth of business and you have an attorney and a half worth of business, then it makes a melt. But I didn't want any of those jobs. And at one point, I briefly was in a partnership and then was out of it. But I picked up something from each of those attorneys. The law firm of Honig and Greenberg, they were highly specialized in tax sale foreclosure. And this attorney, Adam Kotler, he did a lot of worker comp, and he taught me if you can break steps down into the smallest iterations, you know, you can train somebody.
Adam Kotler from Kotler Hernandez.
Yes, yes.
I know Adam.
Yes, yes. So he taught me that, you know, if you train people to do certain discrete tasks, you can break it down and you know, you can save your attorney time. I worked with Morris Starkman, and he did a really nice job of showing that if you cut your costs and keep your costs as low as possible, even smaller cases can be profitable because it's the net that matters, right? It's the net. There's a guy, David Rockman. He's very aggressive, but I learned that sometimes it's you got to fight the fight. You know, sometimes you got to do that. A guy named Charlie Nathanson, who kind of recruited me to be solo, he's a wonderful man and really a tremendous guy. And I learned that you could get a lot of business from attorneys. And so I sort of picked and cobbled it together. And then I found this really ugly part of the law that there's a lot of unfavorable things. And I kind of was like, okay, if I can just figure out a way to keep my costs low and tailored to this one area law, and I can use some of my connections from doing per diem and relationships, maybe I can make a go of this. And that's sort of how I ended here. I just kind of adapted the model and kept relationships, and here we are.
I could tell you this, federal workers' compensation, and we do a lot of injury programs, but it's one area of the law that is not, it's It's not, there's not a parallel and equal. It's not the same thing as regular workers' compensation, state workers' comp. How about giving us a little bit of a basic overview in regards to the difference between federal and state workers' comp?
Sure. So in general, most worker compensations have some concept of the same three basic types of benefits. Their terminology may be different, but it's basically the same thing. Medical benefits, wage compensation for time you're out of work, and some type of permanent injury award, okay? So, and federal workers' compensation, really we're talking about FICA. So just let's take one step back. I hate to do this, but federal workers' compensation really is a broad term. It's for anything that's covered under federal law. So there's actually multiple different types of federal workers' compensation. I really only specialize in one, which is the most predominant at this point. I used to do all of them. Now I do a few of them. So some of the ones I don't do anymore is FELA, which is Federal Employees Liability Act. Those are railroads. Jones Act. Those are sort of with boats. Longshoremen. And then Defense Base Act and things like that. So really I specialize in what's called Federal Employees Compensation Act.
Why did you kind of back off of sure. the other areas?
Because again, being specialized, because they're different enough that they required a different type of costs. And so even so, we kept running the numbers.
It didn't fit your model.
It didn't fit the model. And so I enjoy and I like talking about federal workers' compensation, but my greater pride and the kind of fun is that I was able to kind of build a widget, right? It's the business model that actually gets me excited. So my partner is very good with that, and he's very good with evaluating the models and also putting people, member management perspective, putting things in the right position to succeed. So I become more of the rainmaker in the firm, and he's more of the management. So he's my slightly junior partner, but he's a managing partner. So he's a buddy of mine from law school. He used to block for me in rough touch flag football. So I'm like, if he's willing to block for me, he's willing to do this. And he's fantastic. So we, at any type of business, you take the bottom 10% of your business and cut it every year. And so at some point, we took a look at Longshore, like it's not profitable. We're dedicating too many resources for too little returns, too much cost investiture. Same thing with FELA. So, that's how we did it. We started off doing it and gradually have cut it more and more. So anyway, back to FICA. So the biggest aspect is that a lot of the general aspects are the same, but it doesn't cut it at MMI. So first thing is, normally maximum medical improvement in many systems is when benefits would cut off. This system doesn't have by default anything like that. The benefits can go forever. So you'll essentially, with super rare exceptions, you'll never get a permanent injury award where they say, hey, look, you're 100% totally disabled forever. But yet, because wage compensation, the way it works is if you can continually show you're disabled by momentum or by proof, you could keep getting wage compensation forever. So you have cervical fusion or lumbar fusion, and if they can't ever identify work you can do or never get back, you could be getting wage compensation until you're 90 and then die, and you could have been getting wage compensation for 40 years. So that's a huge difference.
Does that happen often?
It enough. I call it the problem of the too good case. And the reason I call it the problem of the too good case is I took a lot of these cases having an injury law background early on where I'm like, oh, this is a spinal fusion case. This is money. This is fantastic. Meanwhile, I still have some of those clients because they never get off wage compensation. If you never get off wage compensation, you essentially, with rare exceptions, you can't really get a schedule award, which is the term for the permitted injury award.
So you're babysitting people for years and years and years.
On a case that's complicated. What'd you say?
Is there a cost of living adjustment?
There is. There's a cost of living adjustment. They do get that. They don't get the benefit of what raises they would get. Okay. But any case, like some of these people, yeah, we're on comp forever, and I've never gotten paid. I've never gotten paid on those cases.
You had to adjust the model again to try to avoid some of these cases that look to be great at the outset that aren't really that great.
That's exactly right. So it's like threading a needle sometimes. The perfect case you kind of want if you're getting a case, the schedule award, let's talk about the schedule award. Schedule award's a permanent impairment rating. You have limbs, they have different values. You have different body parts, they have different values. So literally, my favorite example is, let's say you have an arm amputated in a federal workers' compensation case. You get an arm amputated. you would get 312 weeks of disability. Why? Because the Department of Labor said that that's what an arm is worth.
Similar to the state law in Pennsylvania, there's a schedule for amputation and different body parts.
Right.
It's a little bit similar to what I say.
But let's say you had a rotator cuff tear with a decent improvement, and then they eventually found a 10% impairment of the arm. You would get 10% of the value of the arm, so you would get a schedule award for 31.2 weeks. The first week would be the date of maximum medical improvement, which is typically the day that you got your impairment evaluation by the doctor, and each week would be paid at your gross weekly wage, adjusted for cost of living sometimes, which would be paid at either 75% or 66 2/3, depending upon if you have a legal dependent, like a spouse or child. But spinal cases, one of the big differences, if you don't have radiculopathy, you can't get a schedule award. The spine is not a scheduled body part. So you're looking to get a schedule award of the neck or the back, but it's for the extremity. It's for the positive EMG generally and the effect on the limb. Right. So that is a huge difference, because if you get somebody that even had, you know, radiculopathy, neuropathy in the leg, a foot drop, they get it cured with the lumbar fusion, they may not be able to get a schedule award. So you have to figure out a different way to earn a living on that case, or not take it, or just not take it. Also, all the money that ever comes out of the claim goes directly to the client. You have to hope they pay you independently.
I did as a young lawyer Social Security work, and it was the same thing. The money would go to the client, and occasionally we wouldn't get paid, and my boss would stomp into the office and say, "Jeff, these three people haven't paid." And I'm like, "You want to go down to collect? You know, how are we going to collect this money? How does that work out for you? Do you get stiff?
So a friend of mine told me long time ago, if you never get beat on a case, doesn't matter how you get beat, whether it's stiff or you lose a case, if you don't ever get beat, you're not taking enough chances. Because there's probably a lot of cases, you just don't want to get beat all the time.
Sure.
Okay?
What's the percentage of getting beat?
5 or 10%, I guess.
It's a workable number.
It's a workable number. I mean, but understand, some of the times we beat ourselves. If we get too much resistance from a client, it's relatively early on, we'll just terminate representation. I don't need leave of the court. As long as I'm not leaving them, you know, a week before a statute or something like that, I won't terminate the representation. But if I know that I'm going to have trouble getting paid, either they haven't paid me already if I take it on a retainer case, or get paid down the road, I'll just get rid of the case. And we have an intensive intake process to test the client as much as that. There's literally, the fees are relatively small. We have an intense intake process, because I'd rather not take your case than literally have to sue you in Arkansas. I'm literally suing a client in Arkansas now.
So the listeners need to understand this is national, right?
National.
Is it international, or is it just?
Yeah, yeah.
So explain.
So I have clients in U.S. territories. I got money for a lady in Guam. That was fun. There's challenges with that. We become really good at adapting around some of those challenges as far as how to do evaluations and things like that. But sometimes, like Jason has a client in I believe China right now. So if you're a civilian employee, let's say of the Department of Defense, and you're stationed overseas, you're a civilian employee. So we're not active military, but there's a lot of civilian employees of the Department of Defense, or Department of the Army or Navy, which is, I think, the woman that was in Guam. I think she was a civilian employee of the Department of the Navy and things like that.
Yeah, what's interesting is. So you're saying that with federal workers' comp, doesn't matter where you're at, it's the same. Regular state PA, state comp. I think I told you this. I'm not sure if I did, but we used to have a saying when I was working on the Walt Whitman Bridge, and that is, if you get injured on the Jersey side, crawl to the PA side.
Yeah,
because of the work, because of the medical, right?
Yeah.
Then I had some attorneys on from Delaware, and I realized that you probably should just crawl across to the PA and write up 95 to Delaware, right? Because, it's
most advantageous.
Right.
Law.
But, but that's because they're all different in each state. You're saying that no matter if you're working, it depends on the agency that you're working, obviously. You cover, I mean, federal is, you're talking about the postal workers. I mean, talk about the wide array of individuals.
Sure.
The employers that they work for.
Sure. I mean, Customs and Border Patrol, TSA, Federal Bureau of Prisons, all the alphabet soup places, like, you know, IRS, you know, like all basically every federal agency.
FBI,
yeah. I've got multiple FBI clients.
Do you advertise to these people, or is it just word of mouth?
We do a little bit of internet advertisement, in parts because you want, but most of the clients, I think, find us by word of mouth in some way. Mm-hmm. But you want to make it easy for them to find you, too. So we do advertise a little bit, but still, I get a majority of my clients from attorneys or from existing clients. But it's important also to remember, just because you're employed by a different agency, the rules are still the same. So what's interesting is that in general, like the post office is really bad. So is the VA in general with the way they treat their employees. They lie to them about their rights all the time because there's no penalty or problem or fee shift ever. So a couple other big problems that this tailors into is, one, if they wrongfully deny your case, even if and it's always the Department of Labor, the Office of Workers' Compensation that's in charge of the case and denies their case. If it's the OWCP's fault, if it's the agency's fault giving bad advice, the agency meaning who you work for, it doesn't matter. It's you're the one who bears the responsibility. Even if you prove it was their fault, all you get is the money that you would have gotten anyway.
And there's no bad faith. There's no way to penalize the federal government.
No. There's no checks. There's no balances. You get COLA, which is always lower than, frankly, real inflation, and then you have to pay your attorney, or you paid your attorney. The other interesting thing is there's no such thing as a settlement. You can't negotiate it. You have to win or you lose each benefit that you ever get.
Huh. So it's interesting. There's no contingency fee agreement in federal workers' comp.
No. So contingency fee is a term of art. What that means is, you know, usually it's controlled by the state administrative code or bar association or law, where you just, I get a third, I get a 40% or whatever it is. So one of the things that I will tend to, I bill by the hour. Every single fee that any federal workers' compensation attorney or non-attorney does has to be billed hourly. But what I generally do is
Can non-attorneys work on these files?
Yes. Right. Yes.
And that's a big benefit to your practice.
Yeah. So non-attorneys can work on it. It's also to play back into why I'm not restricted by state. I technically don't have to be an attorney in any state. And there's not really an advantage to me being an attorney, except that it's a marketing advantage, right? Because I can say I'm a federal worker compensation lawyer. Because there are so few attorneys that do this, and it's so hard to earn a living. And, you know, the cost of running an office, the cost of
babysitting files for 10 years.
Yeah, right. So you have these people that live in their mom's basement that call themselves advocates, and I'm bound by the same rules that those people are. Wow. So I got hired by a client recently back that had hired one of these people, and they screwed up their case, and they hired me back, but they had to pay me a retainer to take the case because I'm like, you know, you screwed this up, you know, this is messed up. I need to act fast, and he did, and he was thankful.
And that's the thing that people need to know when it comes to federal workers' compensation. There's a fee, you know, for every attorney that you could pop. I mean, and there's only a couple of you.
What is the fee to get started to see you? Or, you know, is there an initial consult fee?
I never charge an initial consultation. I think it's insulting. I'm happy to give free advice. I've actually found, in my opinion, it's you never know which branch bears fruit. And I think what comes around goes around. So as part of my business model, I give free information. Like, I don't mind. Like, you know, if someone is satisfied and doesn't want me to represent them because I took, you know, give them the tip of the iceberg information and they don't want me, that's okay. Because it's not what you know that's going to get you somewhere. It's what you don't know. And they're always going to run into that end of the maze. And if they don't, that's good for them. But those are the people that would have complained at the end of the case, I'm going to have trouble getting paid because what did you do for me anyway? It's fine. Right. I'm happy. I always give a free consultation. And then what I do is I figure out, look, is this a case where I think you're likely to get retroactive wage compensation or a schedule award? And then I bill hourly, and then we'll cap it at those amounts, or I charge a retainer up front, depending upon the type of case.
So let's do this. Let's pay some bills. We'll have more from Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg and his guest Aaron Allmiller after the break.
Suffering a personal injury due to the negligence of another, whether it be from a motor vehicle accident, an Uber or Lyft accident, a slip and fall accident, a workplace accident, or other, can be a devastating, even life-altering experience. Jeffrey Nuremberg of Nuremberg Law Associates understands how an injury can turn your life upside down. That's why he represents his clients with the utmost care and passion. At Nuremberg Law Associates, you get the representation and resources you need to win and the personal touch and results you deserve. Contact Jeff Nuremberg of Nuremberg Law Associates at 215-569-9100 or online at phillypilaw.com and get the recovery and justice you deserve.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Legal Talk with Jeff Nuremberg on WWDB Talk 860. I'm your co-host, Joe Dougherty. We've got a fantastic show. We're talking to Aaron Allmiller of Allmiller Lomax. We're talking federal workers' compensation. I find it really interesting that a lot of our state workers' compensation firms, they've sent, you know, they're looking for a federal workers' compensation attorney. They don't have to look far. You get a ton of referrals for them, which to me is there's no bigger form of flattery than to have other workers' compensation firms that don't do the federal, pick you in order to do it. That must make you feel pretty good.
It does. It's the highest compliment. One of the highest compliments is
besides
when
being Jeff.
Jeff's first ever guest. That's right. Yeah.
Probably exceeds the kids and the wife.
Yeah, I'm going to tell my wife that when I get home.
Yeah. You know what, babe? I found there's a memory, greater than our marriage, and I just experienced it today.
That's right.
I'll be packing my bags for
it. That's right.
Mike, beware on ESPN. We're coming for you.
We're going to buy his out next week.
That's right. It was neck and neck between my oldest son Eli's bar mitzvah and marriage, and now it's first show.
Be honest with you, we just exceeded my kid and my wife, so we're good. Thank you, Jeff, for letting me be here.
Glad to have you guys.
One of the things also is I'd like to we deal with a lot of. So we have an injured workers program. I could never understand what goes on with the federal work. I got a couple calls from federal guys from the post office. I'm like, you got the wrong guy. But now they got the right guy because now we can just point.
We have the guy.
Exactly. Talk about what notice. Somebody's regular workers' compensation, you got 180 days or 120 days to give notice. Of course, if you don't give it in the first 15 minutes, they're going to deny you or do whatever they have to do. What is it in federal?
Sure. So we'll talk about a general traumatic injury claim. So what generally the agency has to have notice. The best way to do it, there's always exceptions to every rule. The best way to do it is file a CA-1, OWCP form CA-1 within the first 30 days. So you technically have within 3 years of the date of the injury to file the CA-1. But the advantage is if you file that CA-1 within the first 30 days, you get sort of a preliminary benefits. Your case is opened as what's called a short form closure case. Now, obviously, stuff can go wrong, things can be challenged, but at least in theory, what you would get is $1,500 worth of medical care and 45 days of continuation of pay. So continuation of pay is paid at your normal rate of pay rather than a discount rate, which is 75% or 66 2/3 if you get ongoing wage compensation beyond that 45 days. So you want to do that. And that's – so a great example is, let's say you're a postal worker and you're delivering mail and you twist an ankle and you file your CA-1. You go to the emergency room. You get some x-rays. They're clean. You go follow up with an ortho. You get a boot. You're out 3 weeks. And then they say you can go back to work. You do a follow-up in 2 weeks, and then you're done. And it was like $1,200 worth of medical care. And your case is never fully developed. That's over. There's no permitted injury award. There's no anything. So then the next level is what we call the fully development of the claim. So once you claim wage compensation beyond that 45 days, and then once you claim medical benefits really exceeding that $1,500 worth, that's when your claim has to be more formally developed. Now, that is still open to you even if you don't file your claim within 30 days. But once you, one of the great things is once that claim has been filed, really within the first 3 years, you actually have satisfied the statutes of limitations. So I'll get calls from attorneys that are panicking, that think they have some type of deadline because they're familiar with, let's say, New Jersey or Pennsylvania or some type of, where they have a deadline, a 2-year statute or whatever it is. Usually their statute of limitations have always been already been satisfied. So the only statute of limitations they have is then once the claim has been appropriately filed, which is just filing the first page with the agency and then the second page is filled out by the agency, you've got a claim. If the claim is formally denied, you will get appeal rights in writing and that will have timelines. And so if your claim is denied formally after that and you don't abide by the appeal deadlines, then your claim is pretty much dead.
Is that if they typically don't deny before the 45 days?
They'll almost never deny.
Okay. With regular workers' comp, you'll have attorneys sit there by speaking to the postal workers, right there. That's my good friend Vince Tarducci calling in right now. I'll call him back before we leave. You'll be getting an introduction.
His ears are ringing.
How about that? Having said that, the regular state workers' compensation, they'll say that 60 to 75% of the cases get denied as a protocol.
Right.
Okay. After 45 days, and I find this really interesting because you could be a postal worker working on your own, walking up somebody's walkway, and get injured, and there's nobody, no witnesses. But my point is, how often... what's the percentage of denials after 45%? Is there a ballpark?
I don't even know. Because remember, I'm getting a sampling of cases at various stages. So you have to understand, it's hard to find me, as we've discussed. It's hard to find an attorney like me. So I get clients at all stages. And here's the best part. This part will blow your mind. Because by default the claim is open forever. If you have a client who injured his knee in 1984 and the claim was accepted, he may be entitled to benefits now. He could have retired in 2000. He may be sitting on his original schedule award. He may be sitting on a reopener. He may be sitting on benefits that I can still get them. So a lot of times I'm getting cases at all types of stages. So like normally a personal injury attorney, you're getting a case
one
within
case
a certain
for a finite
horizon.
Amount of time, and it's over after a year or two.
That's right.
That's it.
My horizon is forever. Right. So I don't, and I'm getting skewed cases in certain ways. Like I'm getting cases when people call after a year, there's going to be disproportionately people that have been denied.
Right.
So I can't even estimate. I can just say we see a lot of cases that are denied a lot, that are denied for really kind of inappropriate reasons.
If they wouldn't need an attorney if they weren't denied.
Well, that's not true, because a lot of times people, the Department of Labor...
Aaron, the best practice is just to agree with me.
this is one of my favorite things. So I'll get a client, I tell people, just refer the case to me. Let me talk to them.
Right.
Let me talk to them. Right. Don't let me do the digging. Right. And somebody will come up with a finger case. And the finger case is usually just as bad for me as it is for every other attorney. Okay. Right. But it turns out, why are they annoyed? Because they're getting a hard time with this finger case. And it turns out they think that everything had been taken care of with their shoulder case previously. Well, they paid for my surgery. They paid for this. Well, did you get a schedule award? What's a schedule award? So
literally, what is a schedule award?
That's the permitted injury award we were talking about.
Right,
so literally they're still sitting on it, and it doesn't matter the cases for 10 years ago. Now, getting those records sometimes can be a challenge, but we've gotten pretty good.
Are these people coming to you with that have been to lawyers before, or are you the first lawyer they spoke to?
Sometimes it's the first lawyer. Sometimes I'm the 10th lawyer. I've had people cry on the phone when I've said I've done federal comp before I've even agreed to take their case. They just, because nobody knows what they're talking about.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This sounds like the worst situation where you want a general practice attorney to jump in and handle the case because you can't dabble in federal workers' compensation.
Yeah, and I usually save those people. The only time I don't is when I can tell when they're lying to me. If you're an attorney, just tell me what the case is. You want to get rid of your case. Usually we'll help you out, because I'm about relationships. So a lot of times I'll try to save the attorney if I can. But if you try to jump this bomb on me, you're on your own. Good luck.
Having said that, talk about the difference in medical when it comes to a regular statewide, I keep saying regular, but, you know, a statewide work comp case, and in a Pennsylvania state, because in Jersey, they control the medical, as you know.
Right.
In Pennsylvania, you know, it's 90 days, but there are some attorneys, and Sam Pine would be one of them, that would tell you directly, no need for, unless you have a collective bargaining agreement with a union, there's no reason to ever go to the panel doctor, because the panel doctor is obviously not your friend.
Right.
But having said, and that's in Pennsylvania, you have the ability to go see your own doctor. What is it like in federal work comp?
You can see your own doctor. They
have to be approved, don't they?
Sort of, yes. So you can start off seeing any doctor on earth that signs up for federal comp. They just have to register with the Department of Labor. But once you've chosen a physician, you have to get permission to see somebody else. You have to get permission to switch. So,
what about an emergency room? Is that
you can go to the emergency room typically?
Do people come and do you have to recommend doctors to them? Do they ask you for referrals, or do they seek out their own medical
usually
treatment?
Usually, we will recommend doctors, but it's a very small percentage of cases, because usually cases are coming to me already in development. Right. So most often, if we're going to refer somebody, it's for the permanent impairment ratings, because it's a specialized one-time visit. In fact, typically, because we're so geographically large, we've got clients, Idaho. I'm looking to try to see if there's a doctor, because a lot of doctors won't want to deal with the Department of Labor as a practical matter, because they're slow. They're slow to pay. So if I find a doctor in Idaho, I'm not yanking the client from that doctor. I'm going to try to establish a relationship
with
the doctor.
What is the pay? In other words,
prevailing.
No, I know that, but what is typically, how irregular are they with doctors?
It depends. It's all over the place. The problem is there's no med intemp. I'm using a Jersey term. Med intemp motion. There's no judge I can run in front of to just say, hey, you pay this person. So they will sit on approvals and things like that for sometimes years. And so sometimes I'll have to ask them through formal denials so that I could go to an appeals branch to get, and which takes itself months and months.
So these doctors who do this have to be willing to wait, obviously, not much unlike a lot of doctors in regular workers' compensation, in Pennsylvania workers' compensation, whereas in Jersey, they have their panel picked. You can't go anywhere.
Yeah. They have to be industrial, they have to be doing it in enough volume, or they have to be stubborn, or they have to be good listeners.
Jeff, let me just make a point. I just want to make that, as our host of the broadcast, I want to remind listeners, obviously, what you do. Clearly, you're a personal injury attorney, and you handle injuries of a different matter, due to the negligence of somebody else. But remind our listeners, if you will, about the practice.
So my firm is concerned with third-party cases. Unlike Aaron, I'm handling car accidents, slip and fall, and some small amounts of state workers' compensation. I'm the third-party attorney. I'm working off a contingency fee. Unlike Aaron, I sign people up to a third or 40%, and people hire me to investigate and spend time, effort, and money with them and with their doctors and investigating all aspects of their case and trying to find a solution and ultimately a settlement for them over a finite period of time. Whereas Aaron's can go on for years and years, I'm hoping to be done in a year or two or less and get people the money that they deserve.
So having said that, I want to clear this. It's a contingency fee agreement, which means there's no out-of-pocket cost to retain your services, number one. Number two, talk about auto accidents, construction site, third-party accidents,
septic cases, Uber cases, any type of bicyclist, motorcyclist, any way you can be hurt as a pedestrian or on any type of a scooter or vehicle, I represent you, and I also get involved in any type of a premises liability case and other aspects of just a small amount of state workers' compensation.
Having said that, is there ever a third-party type case where the two of you tell me about that. We got about 6 minutes left. This has been ridiculous.
Oh, great. We had a slip and fall that Jeff managed, that I've been handling the federal comp case, and Jeff managed to settle successfully, did a great job on the third-party case. It was a premises liability, snowplow type situation. And so that relationship is important, because a lot of third-party attorneys, if you're hearing this, third-party attorneys, call me sooner rather than later, because you can make mistakes early on, such as instituting suit too early because rates of return and liens, those things matter. And so Jeff and I communicated very well and really maximized the benefits for
we have had a wonderful relationship together through the years. And, you know, there's also this federal workers' compensation lien aspect where Aaron will get the client a lot of money, and in a third-party case, I have to pay that money back. So Aaron and I speak frequently about these cases because I have to pay back the workers' compensation lien federally the way I would also in a state case.
So communication
is significant.
Part of it is between the attorneys as well as obviously the attorneys and the clients. That you know, that when it's a third-party case, and a third-party case is how it just define what a third-party case would be if you would see one of your clients.
So imagine, I'm probably misusing the terms a little bit, but you and your employer are first and second party. The third party is the other person that caused your injury. So it's the person outside your relationship, if you want to think about that caused your injury.
So in essence, if somebody's walking and they trip at their own fault, or they hit themselves with a hammer,
correct,
then that's not a third-party case.
No.
They did it. But if somebody else hits you with the hammer working for somebody else, or if you're tripping,
a postal worker is delivering mail and gets rear-ended by you or me.
Classic.
We're the third party.
Right. Right.
We caused their injury.
Absolutely.
But they're going to get federal workers' comp benefits through Aaron, and I'm going to go after the person that rear-ended.
And I imagine it's important, Aaron, for an attorney to have an attorney like Jeff handle that because he understands the idiosyncrasies of federal comp. And I guess is sensitive to the time issue between the two of you.
Critical. So one of the things is that you can double dip in this world, but not fully. So Jeff's talked about how the money had to be paid back. It's not all of it, but the amount you have, the order that you're getting the benefits makes a difference. So there was a personal injury attorney, a firm that was a little bit more of a puppy mill that raced to put the thing in suit and settled the case. And they probably cost the client some money because they settled that aspect of the case. And so the government doesn't contribute part of the attorney's attorney fee when you're just getting money for the personal injury case. If you're getting it for money that they've already spent, they will contribute back to the claimant money for part of the attorney fee. So the order of events matters. That's why it's important that relationship be established early.
And the
early
lawyers
and
have
good.
A strong relationship and talk frequently and regularly.
No question about it. And it just when you're dealing with, and I'll kind of end it, you know, this has been ridiculously fast. When you're dealing with federal workers' comp, you're not dealing with a judge, right? You're dealing with an administrator, correct?
Correct. They're an unholy combination of a judge, jury, claims adjuster, defense attorney, medical investigator, and a lot of them don't have that background, let's just say.
Yeah.
On Zoom now, right? Is it on Zoom?
It's usually by telephone if you get to that level. Otherwise, it's not even that. It's just by letters.
Wow.
And if you're lucky, you get a phone call. Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, I imagine not trying to navigate that system on your own without a professional such as yourself. By the way, just so before, if you've ever gone to Aaron's website, you have a lot of quotes from clients. And I thought that was incredibly impressive, man. I mean, individuals that you could just see when you read it that thank God you guys came in.
He's been doing this a long time. 15 years of federal workers' comp makes him one, if not the foremost expert in the area. He's one of a very small handful.
Absolutely. Well, Aaron, it's been awesome having you on the broadcast, Jeff. He's been a great choice.
Thank you,
friend.
Aaron, again.
Thank you, guys.
We much appreciate you, and happy birthday again. And
thank you.
Go Sixers tomorrow night.
You only turned 30 one time, Aaron. You should enjoy
30.
It.
Right, right, yeah.
Little did you know, Jeff, when he was working with you back years ago, he was only 5.
4 kids at 18, 19, and 20.
Unbelievable.
I was an early bloomer.
Boom. Having said that, contact information for yourself and the firm if somebody's trying to get in touch.
Sure. You just Google Allmiller Lomax. It'll come up. A.U. Miller, one word.
Awesome. Fantastic. Our host, Jeff Nierenberg, very successful official launch broadcast. Contact information for yourself and the firm should somebody suffer a personal injury.
Sure. If anybody's been hurt, please call me. It's Jeffrey Nierenberg at phillypilaw.com. And I can be reached at 215-569-9100. And thank you for a great show. Again, thank you, Aaron. And looking forward to next month.
Absolutely. And we'll have a lot to talk about on what happened to Ben. Hopefully he's hopefully he's okay, but, you know, we don't, you know, it's going to be a mess. Having said that, I want to thank everybody for tuning into Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg on WWDB Talk 860. We've had a fantastic show, Jeff Nierenberg. You know, I can't thank you enough for doing the great job that you've done. And, of course, Aaron Allmiller, awesome job. On behalf of Jeff and Aaron, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.